On the left, Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop, steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side, caught by Diggs.
Stay
up!
Oh, my God,
loose!
Oh, my God!
At the 30!
No
way! Touchdown! Are you kidding me?
What a miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle!
No way!
Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have walked up on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle!
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Here with the whole crew celebrating probably, maybe not probably, absolutely the craziest, wildest Vikings win that I can ever remember seeing. I was probably in shock for a solid 24 hours after that game, really processing everything that happened. But I got all the boys with me here. Split the show up a little bit differently than we have in times past. So we're going to go through, do some introductions. And then the first part of the show is going to be just kind of walking through the emotions of the game. And then if you want to drop off because you don't want to hear anything about analysis or anything else like that, then we'll go through, break down, do a little bit of that, and get you on out of here. So, JR, we'll start with you, man. How you doing? How you feeling? And how long did it take you to get over the craziness that was the end of that game, man?
I'm good, man. We still playing. Surprisingly, still playing. So, I'm good. Team is still in contention for the first ever Super Bowl. Just going through the emotions and the ending of that game was just crazy. Something I've never felt before, never experienced before as a Vikings fan. The last 10 seconds of that game, or the last minute of that game, really was the craziest high-low I've ever experienced as a sports fan. It was an unexpected ending, and I'm just glad it ended up in our favor as opposed to bad ways in years past and the bad luck that we've had in the playoffs in years past. I'm just glad it ended in our favor, and we finally got the Minnesota miracle.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Mr. Gorham, came back a little early from the boys' trip, boys' weekend, to get locked into the bunker, watch the game. How was it? How are you feeling? Tell us a little bit about the ups and downs and when you finally processed that it was real and we actually did win this thing.
Yeah, like the whole week, I was pretty chill. I was pretty calm. I was like, for some reason, I just didn't have any really worries. I'm nervous for this upcoming game, but I wasn't nervous. I don't know why, but the game came and I was like, uh-oh, I'm getting nervous. And then the first couple drives happened, the first quarter and a half happened, and I'm just like, my mind starts thinking about the Eagles, and I'm like, bro, don't start thinking about the Eagles. Don't do that. Don't do it yet. This game's not, it's far from over. It's 17-0, don't mean anything. They missed the 58-yard field goal before half. We missed our 49-yard field goal in the half. I was like, that's going to come back to get us. Because we had a chance to go 20-0 with even more momentum going into half. So that was the first part of my wave. And then second half started, and the third quarter started, and I'm like, we didn't score in that first drive. I thought we were about to. And then Case Keenum takes that sack, and I'm like, uh-oh. Roller coaster going again. It's going getting a little worse. And I start getting nervous. And that whole third quarter to me just felt like we were playing not to lose. And, oh, man. And then we get to the end of the game. I don't even – I'm still trying to relive it. I kind of blacked out, and I wasn't even playing. And just – man, I don't even know how to explain it because, we're sitting there watching. I'm like, the end of the last, very last drive, we have a false start. I'm like, man, this is we can't catch a break. And then the first play to Diggs, I'm like, okay, there's a chance here real quick. Call that timeout, got, I think, 17 seconds left. Miss the throw, or Jarius Wright falls down, miss the throw, whatever. And I'm like, I don't even know what to do at this point. I'm like, this game's basically over. We might take one more opportunity, but we got to get out of bounds. Diggs catches the ball, and it's a wrap. And I'm just My wife's standing on the table. I'm standing on the table. Teddy's looking at us like, what is going on? He had no idea. Like, Teddy, like, we were just freaking. We were, like, freaking out, like screaming. She's jumping on me. Like, we're just, like, running around the house. And Teddy's just like, what is going on? So he's, like, freaking out, jumping around with us. So, it was a moment I'll never forget. Man.
Yeah,
I swear awesome. I thought I was about to have a heart. I thought I was about to have a heart attack.
And last but certainly not least, you know, you wrote about it already. I mean, that was a quick turnaround. But the man from inside the stadium representing for CTP, Saxy, tell us about it. How was it? What was the vibe when you got there? Was it as nervous in the stadium in the second half as it was for all of us? And then, like, how wild was it when that finish happened, man?
Yeah, man, it was crazy. I mean, you can if you haven't gotten to go read my story about it, it was pretty crazy. Got a last minute ticket. Yeah, the stadium was electric, man. Like, the entire first half was electric. People were on the feet. No one was sitting down around me. Everyone was cheering. Skulls chant kept going on. And it even got to a point where, you know, we were blowing out and we obviously were having a conversation off air and stuff. And then I remember you, Jason, you saying like, hey, man, we blowing these boys out. Me and JR just like, Jason, shut up. Come on. It's not over yet. So, you know, second half hits around and I think I told you guys, I kind of had this nervous feeling going into this game. And, you know, second half rolls around and I was just like, this is what I was feeling, you know, this last minute, I was so scared Drew Brees was going to get a minute to get a chance to go win the game. And then when they kicked that field goal, I'm just like, okay, this is how it's going to end. Like Miles said, that false start was really like, man, like, this is it. This is the end of our season. I mean, it was a good 13-3 season. Great story. But then, you know, they run that first play on first down, whatever. And, you know, Jerry's right slips and I see it. And I remember like, they should probably run that back because that's the only way they're going to get to the boundaries. And they get a deeper shot to Diggs, and you know, everyone in the stadium is just, you can kind of feel like, all right, guys, we gotta go. And the fans were like visibly upset when, you know, that got those three Saints guys were like keeping Diggs, you know, from being able to go down and like, you know, get the ball to the ref anyways. I'm telling you, like, that last play, he caught the ball. The stadium was just happy that he caught it, right? But then when he started running and kept going and he scored, I have never hugged so many strangers ever. Like, every single person on my row, the next row, the row after that, just hugging people. Just because it was finally that feeling of, you know, everything that we've gone through. I mean, on my birthday 2 years ago, I had to sit there through the Blair Walsh missed field goal. And, you know, I still remember 09. And it just felt like, you know, when we watched all those NFL highlights of the playoffs and, you know, greatest, you know, play of the year and stuff, you almost never see any Vikings plays whatsoever. And even if you do, it's like, you know, maybe just 10 or 9 or something. But to think that, you know, this is, you know, one, not only one of the greatest plays in this playoffs, but one of the greatest plays in playoff history. It was electric. No one wanted to leave their seats. Everyone just, they just wanted to stay. Like, it wanted to, like, continue to believe. You know, they I mean, they were just in disbelief. So it was just a lot of shock and just awe. But it's a moment I'm never going to forget. So it's a moment I'll tell my kids about. And it was phenomenal.
Well, that's awesome, man. And okay, maybe I lied just a little bit, because I mean, obviously, we're gonna start off. We're probably gonna spend a little bit more time than we even should talking about, you know, the Minneapolis miracle. But JR, I want you to hop in real quick. Yinka kind of mentioned, you know, they ran the concept and they ran it back. But can you kind of set it up for us? Let us know kind of some of the X's and O's of that play, that concept, how it worked. And I mean, obviously, you know, there was the unfortunate piece of, you know, Marcus Williams, who, you know, draft prospect I really did like going in. You know, sad to see it happen to the man. Glad it did, though. Yeah, break it down for us. Help us understand what the concept was and, you know, what they were trying to do with that play.
Yeah, so basically it was a levels concept with three receivers, Kyle Rudolph, Jarius Wright, and Stephon Diggs. So a levels concept. It basically was a flood concept where you have a high, intermediate, and a low level route attacking each area of the field. The low route, obviously, was Kyle Rudolph. The intermediate route was Jarius Wright. and the high level route, obviously with Stephon Diggs, and all were designed to go to the sideline because they were trying to obviously get out of bounds to preserve time and try to get in range to attempt a field goal. It's funny because the Saints were in cover two where they had two high safeties. Nobody was covering the middle of the field. And Marcus Williams, his one job on this play is to keep them inbounds because they want the time to run out. He's not supposed to let anybody get to the sideline. And that's what he was doing on that play. But he hit what he was looking at, and that's the ground. He can't duck his head right there and just completely whiff. What he was trying to do was he was aiming at Stephon Diggs' outside leg, his face mask to the ground, and he closed his eyes, and he couldn't see what he was hitting. And just a heads up and savvy play by Stephon Diggs to keep his feet and to run it in for the touchdown. But it was a great call by Pat Shurmur. They actually ran it two plays prior to. Great call in that situation. I love the play design because it's a safe play in that situation. You don't want to run it over the middle of the field or run anybody over the middle of the field because you risk running out of time and you really wasn't going to have time to spike it. But it was basically a simple flood concept or levels concept, attacking three areas of the field designed to go to the deep guy.
And JR, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I know Marcus Williams is getting a lot of flack right now, but I mean, as far as like everything before the whiff, I mean, he was correctly aligned. I mean, and he started to, you know, he did everything as far as assignment goes of what he was supposed to do, what he was coached to do. The only thing obviously that happened is that he missed the tackle, correct? Yeah. Is that how you saw it too?
The Saints had the perfect play call on Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, called the perfect play. Put him in the proper situation. They just didn't execute at the end. And the worst thing that could have happened to the Saints happened.
And it looked like
you can't let him score in that situation.
And it looked like to me Marcus Williams was trying to make the mistake that coaches told him not to do, which was pass interference, you know, any kind of penalty in that situation.
Yeah.
Like he looked like he was trying to avoid that instead of avoiding the play altogether, which, you know, is the whole problem right there. Is coach on the after the, because the Saints called a timeout right before that play, and you know, the coach told him two things, you know, no late hit on the quarterback and no pass interference calls. And so Marcus Williams is like, I'm there a little early, because you could tell from the replay from every angle Marcus Williams got there early, and instead of going after the ball, instead of doing anything, he was afraid of making that mistake of the pass interference. You could just see it, like it looked like he was afraid of making that play, of that, you know, making that mistake, and with, you know, and being afraid of that mistake, like, you know, trickle down effect, you know.
Yeah, because it's gonna be a spot foul if he did get a pass interference right there.
Hey, but he made the perfect mistake though, because not only did he miss the tackle, but he tackled Ken Crawley for us too.
Yeah, right.
So thank you, Marcus. Thank you. So kind of moving along a little bit here. Then a random question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. And I'm going to start with you, Sexy Prince. Which player had your favorite reaction and after it all went down? Like, which player were you looking at like, wow, and just keep, like, you went back and watched over and over and over again just to see that player react to the improbable finish in that game?
I mean, I think this is probably going to be most people's answer, but Everson Griffin. You know, he had the same expression that I saw on so many faces in the stadium. It's just like, this didn't happen. Like, there was a flag on the play. This, it can't be real. Our season is over. And all you can say is just like, WTF, man. Like, what is going on? And you could see it, like, even looking down from, I mean, I was up high, but I could look down and I could see him just visibly showing his disbelief. And everyone in the stadium looked exactly like that. So, I mean, for me, that was my favorite reaction, because it's like, that's exactly how I felt on the inside.
How about you, Miles?
Yeah, I mean, I probably was going to go with Everson too, but I won't even go with the Saints player, because Tommy Lee Lewis, the Saints player, I'm sure you all have seen the replay, the look on his face of just like, wait, what? that was one for me.
I mean, that's an acceptable response as well.
Right.
So yeah, that's acceptable. But,
I mean, I'm going to say Stephon Diggs, just because I think once he got to the end zone, he had, like, he knew what was going on, but he also, like, didn't know what just happened. Like, he knew the game just ended. He knew he just won the game. But at the same time, he was like, I don't, like, I just woke up. Like, this is, like, he, like, this was all like that, that, you know, you have those dream scenarios, and you wake up, and you're like, no, that didn't happen. That's what, that's exactly what that, that was like, that moment for Diggs. And, like, seeing the whole, his whole reaction to it, it was just phenomenal.
Man, you stole mine, because I was going to go with Diggs, too. Diggs showed he was really that. He showed he was really that dude, though. When he right. he got across the line, like, he immediately owned that moment with the helmet toss and just mugging for the camera. The walk, just everything. The
walk-off helmet toss.
Just the walk-off. Just like, what? What? You know, like, just completely owned that. It was amazing. It was amazing. It's the new wallpaper on my phone, the helmet toss.
Can we, real quick, can we talk about the ref picking up the flag on the big helmet toss? Like, the ref threw the flag and then someone must have been like, bro, come on, really?
Yeah, he was straight up like, you know what? No.
I'm going to pick that up right now real quick.
Man, but like, where were they going to assign the penalty? Like, what kickoff? I know. You know, like, just put that back in your pocket, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about
even, even if they, you know, because I know that they ended up kneeling down afterwards and stuff. Even if they kicked the field goal, you know, they, at most the Saints would have gotten 2 points out of that. So,
this really should have ran into the end zone.
Only people wanted that kick was Vegas.
Yeah, they really did.
Imagine if they went for two. Imagine, look at the defensive players for the Saints. And what if the Vikings just went for two? Just to go with the throats.
Yeah, I would have been okay with it. Yeah, man, how about you, man? What player had your favorite reaction at the end of that game?
So everybody's already said the obvious ones, Everson Griffin and Stephon Diggs. I'm going to go with a different answer. Caleb Jones. He was the first person to hug Stephon Diggs, even though he wasn't even in uniform. He ran all the way on the field. He actually was running side by side with Stephon Diggs. I was scared he was going to knock the ref over because that's a penalty, sideline infraction. But he was the guy that was running sideline or hip-to-hip with Stephon Diggs down the sideline. He was the first guy to hug Stephon Diggs once he was in the end zone. So I'm going to go with Caleb Jones.
Yeah, that is an awesome answer as well. And, yeah, man, like, as we're talking about it right now, which is funny because, like I said, like, all of Monday I was just kind of, like, still in a bit of shock, like, I was feeling good, but like it really hadn't all set in. Like, wow, this actually happened. This was real. But as we're talking about it right now, like it's all starting to come back. Like, wow, like that actually happened to us. Like, we're playing again this week, playing the Eagles. Like, yeah, like it's crazy. Like, it's all coming back right now. But I want to go through a couple things kind of quick here. Yinka, I think everyone touched on them a little bit here, but we'll move through them pretty quickly. I guess we'll start with Prince since you brought it up first here. Rapid fire. Describe the first half of the game for me and how you were feeling, and the second half of the game and how you were feeling, just as quickly as you can. Help us understand the emotions and where you were at with it.
Rapid fire. I mean, this first half, great, but skepticism. Second half, expectation, and then relief. The first half isn't, you know, any lead for me for this Vikings team doesn't really feel comfortable unless it's like a true blowout. You know, like if we had put up 35, I would have been like, all right, cool. Like, I guess we won this game. But 17 for me wasn't enough. And then in the second half, it showed because, I had a nervous feeling. So skepticism and then, I guess, expectation and relief.
Awesome. How about you, Miles? What were you feeling? First half, second half? How did it feel? Was it the same? Was it different?
I was a roller coaster of emotions.
Okay.
First half, like I in my mind, the first half, I kept saying, we need to get 20 points before the half. That was like at least 20 points before half. Didn't happen, so it kind of uneasy at the end of the first half, even though we were winning. Second half, I mean, I honestly don't even know how to explain it. It was just pretty much what Prince said, like. Disbelief and then disbelief.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair there. And JR, how about you, man? First half, second half. I feel like you were pretty close to Prince because you were also, you know, chastising me in the first half, telling me to stop being so cocky about where we were in the game. But let us know. Let the listeners know kind of where were you in the first half and how were you feeling in the second half?
Yeah, so mine is a bit of an oxymoron. I would say uncomfortable relaxation. I was happy that they did show up and get out to a decent lead in the first half, 17-0. But I was upset that Kai Forbath did miss the field goal going into halftime because I felt like that was going to come back to bite us somehow, some way, just because that's how the Vikings look has been in years past. And whenever a kicker misses a field goal that doesn't seem like it matters a lot at the moment, it just always seems like in the back end it comes back to haunt a team. And that's the type of feeling that I had entering the third quarter. And like I tweeted out at halftime, good coaches make adjustments, or great coaches make adjustments at halftime. And Sean Payton clearly is a great coach. We knew the Saints offense was going to wake up eventually. And that's what we saw in the third quarter. He started getting Michael Thomas more involved. He started getting Alvin Kamara more involved. And the Saints offensive line started blocking extremely well. We didn't see Drew Brees get pressured as much as we saw in the first half. So once all those guys started waking up, I was like, oh, man, here we go. And it was a snowball effect. They scored. They got on the board. It was 17-7. Then Case Keenum comes out and throws that brutal interception. I'm like, oh, man, here we go. Here comes the inevitable. Our bad luck is rearing its old head again. Our playoff luck is showing up again. So I was a roller coaster, like Miles said, in the third and fourth quarter. When Forbath did make it was a sigh of relief. But Will Lutz came back and made another clutch field goal as well. I'm not going to lie. I was ready to get ready for the draft. I didn't think they was going to score on that last drive, especially when it started with a false start penalty. I was like, oh, man, there's no way they're going to score on this drive. There's no way they're going to drive the length of the field and score, even get a field goal. I just didn't have any hope in them at that point because the drive started off with a penalty. But it ended up working in our favor, and it was a Minnesota miracle, like everybody's saying.
Yeah, man, it was wild. First half, like, you know, y'all know me, though. Same thing, like, even last year during, like, the Super Bowl when the Falcons were playing. I'm here for these jokes. So I was firing off all kinds of reckless business on Twitter before you guys told me to stop it and stop putting that negative energy out in the air. The second half started, and I feel like it was as soon as we had that first run with Latavius that got stuffed, and we went and we took that terrible sack, and I was like, oh boy. I don't know. It was like from that moment, I was like, ugh. They went down. I think they got points there, and it was like standing up in the basement because my family had left me alone to watch the whole game. Just like, here we go. Just kind of the slow march to death, basically. Like, and then the interception from Keenum, and they score again. And you're like, man, like, here we go again. Just watching. Like, we kicked the field goal to retake the lead. And, like, I wasn't even happy. It was like, Drew Brees has, what, a minute and 36 seconds and needs 3 points? Like, that's done. And then, yeah, just, like, the disbelief after Stephon Diggs ran that in. Like, it didn't really – we had process, like I said, for basically a full day after the fact. Like, wow, that really happened. But speaking of, you know, the disbelief that it all happened, there's a person that we have to talk about here. It's Coach Sean Payton. And JR, I'm going to start with you. I wanted to get your reaction because this is one of those things that I know folks have gotten really worked up about. You know, Sean Payton out there counting his chickens before they hatch, talking a bit of smack to the fans, doing a little skull clap. What were your thoughts when you when that story first kind of surfaced on Twitter, and then when the pictures and the GIFs and everything showed Sean Payton mocking the fans right before he was the victim of the walk-off touchdown by Stephon Diggs?
You read what you saw. That's what I was thinking. You never celebrate, like I told y'all in the group me. I don't get comfortable in the clock until the clock hits zero, and that game is an exact replica on why you do that. Because whenever you do ugly things, it comes back to haunt you in the end. And just taunting the fans, I mean, all that was just bush league by him, in my opinion. You know, him saying boom up and down the sideline, just the little antics that he was doing. I mean, you reap what you sow. And it just came back to bite him. And I didn't want to believe that he actually was doing the skull chant on the sideline with, what, 20-something seconds left after they made the field goal. But it's funny that that came back to bite him in the end.
Yeah, man, I loved it. And, Miles, how about you, man? Like, what was your reaction to the skull clap and all the rest of that with Sean Payton?
I mean, yeah, I mean, the dude's kind of a douche. I mean, that's just kind of the person he is. We've learned that. I mean, it is what it is. But I also think – like, if this was Mike Zimmer doing that to the Saints, Vikings fans would love him to death. Like, they'd be like, yeah, keep talking that mess.
Yeah.
Sam, you're the best. You're our coach. No, it's okay if you do it, but if another team does it to us, yeah, you're the worst person in the world. So, like, that's why I'm like, I'm not going to get myself too worked up about it. I think, you know, like y'all are saying, like, karma, like, that's why you don't talk. I don't like to talk trash before the game's over. That, like, I just don't do it. That's why y'all don't see me on Twitter during the games. Like, I can't. So, yeah, I mean, it just came back to bite him. Like, he won't learn. He's not the type of person to learn from those kind of mistakes because he doesn't feel like it was karma. So, it is what it is. I don't really care. I didn't really have much to think of Sean Payton before this game. So, it doesn't change now.
And one thing I will say, like, kind of, and I was, you know, these was one of the things I was tweeting quite a bit during the game. But Sean Payton, he seemed real pressed in this game. Like, he was doing some uncharacteristic things. Like, it felt like in this game, the pressure of all of it, like, maybe the pressure of legacy and everything, like, the trick plays and the ridiculous challenges, like, it really felt like he was cracking under the pressure a little bit. And then when he thought he'd won this thing, he just, you know, let out with the foolishness. But, like, he coached a terrible game. He coached an awful game.
Wait, but you didn't think that trick play was, like, the perfect time? Because it was there.
It was sure the guy got open.
The challenges were terrible. Like, yeah, I'm saying,
the player got open, but that's just one part of the play, right? Like, you have a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback who's ripping the Vikings. Like, he's getting in a rhythm, ripping the Vikings up. Sure, Kamara got open, but if I have a choice at any point in the game, especially on third and one, between Drew Brees throwing a football and Willie Snead the fourth throwing a football.
No, I get
football
it.
With Drew Brees, you know what I mean?
I just thought the timing, because, you know, we expected, like, yeah, he definitely didn't know what to do with the second and short, third and shorts, because we kept stuffing them on any runs, in, you know, within 2 yards, basically. So he definitely did press that. But I thought it was the timing was, because there was like 8.5 minutes left in the game, I think. They had a lot of momentum, so I think he was like, "I'm gonna shove it down their throats right now." It didn't work, but that's just kind of what I thought his thought process was there.
I guess I don't feel like, if you really feel like you're straight up better than a team like that, like, that's not, I don't know, like, if you want to do like a trick play or something like that, and you want to, you know, do a throwback pass and have your quarterback try to hit someone deep or do a flea flicker or something like that. I don't know. I have a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback in my backfield. He's the only one throwing passes for me. You know, I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at with it. But you're Sexy Prince. I guess we'll move on.
Real quick. Yeah, go ahead. I'm all for a coach playing to win, and that's exactly what Sean Payton was doing. Because, like, if they hit on that and that scores, like, that game's a wrap, in my opinion. So I'm all for going for the throat. That's what I was telling my wife. I tell her anytime we're beating a team, you got to step on the throats, and you know you got to bury a team. You know, you have momentum. You got to keep going, and that's what I think Sean Payton was trying to do, because he's like, I got momentum. This is the perfect time to hit this call. It's open. My guy just didn't make the play, but
and that's the part. Like, we agree on that, and that's one of the things that, like, I complain about sometimes. I think with the Vikings, and that we'll get a lead, which is part of why I think that, you know, we never feel like any lead is safe. Like, you get a lead, and then we will seemingly take our foot off the gas and maybe go a little bit more conservative with things. So, yeah, going for the throat, I'm definitely all about it. But like I said, like, Drew Brees is my quarterback. You know, go some hard play action and try to hit something deep. You know, but I don't want Willie Snead throwing the ball in clutch situations. I just don't want that.
Hey, that's disrespect to Willie Snead. That man had 4,000 yards passing his senior year in high school.
That was a long time ago, though.
I know. I'm just because Troy Aikman did not want us to win that game at all. Like, it was, yeah.
Sexy Prince, I'm gonna ask you two questions at once, and we're just gonna transition from Sean Payton into the last thing we're gonna talk about. That's really not analysis of the game. You know, obviously, tell us how you feel about the Sean Payton thing, and then really the last kind of just moment in the game that Vikings fans have been talking about a lot. You know, even well after the game was, you know, the collision, Michael Thomas, you know, Andrew Sandejo, knocks Sandejo out of the game. Really scary moment there. So just let us know your thoughts on, you know, first Sean Payton, next that play, and then we'll go back through. Everyone can talk about that before we get into actually doing a little bit of analysis on this game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about the Sean Payton thing. I mean, it was obviously a douchey thing to do in it. I think it just adds to the sweetness of victory, just because, you know, you kind of want coaches to be the ones to set like a mature example, and Sean Payton just didn't. So I don't really, I wasn't really worked out. I just thought it was hilarious. As far as the Andrew Sendejo, I know a lot of people, both at the stadium and, you know, on whether it be on Twitter or just Vikings fans, felt like it was a dirty hit. But watching it back, as well as, you know, seeing it live, I didn't necessarily feel like it was a dirty hit. I thought it was more of like, you know, Thomas and Sendejo were kind of coming towards each other and both didn't see each other. And then it got to a point where Michael Thomas just reacts and just like, oh crap, I need to protect myself. And he throws his kind of his forearm ahead to protect himself. So I didn't think it was a dirty hit. I know that it sucks when you have a player who gets knocked out, but I think it's a combination of both players maybe just needing to be a little bit more aware of what's happening so that kind of stuff doesn't happen. But you know, in football, you're wearing a helmet, you know, you don't see everything in your peripherals, if you will. So I don't know. I just didn't see it as a dirty hit. And I know some people might disagree with that, but I thought it was clean enough where, you know, a flag shouldn't have been thrown.
Okay. Miles, how about you, man? What are your thoughts? I know that you've probably at some point in your playing career, you were that receiver coming in on that short in route. Yeah. So what do you think might've been going through Michael Thomas's head there? And do you think he was legitimately trying to put Sendejo out of the game?
No, I've watched it a few times, and I like to think he wasn't trying to kill Sendejo. I think he saw him coming at the last second and was like, I'm going to stand my ground. I'm not going to get crunched. But like at the same time, Sendejo didn't have his head up. And rule number one, when you're free running like that, like keep your head up. So I don't think Thomas was trying to deliberately like hurt Andrew Sendejo. At the same time, I don't think he was like, I'm going to let you just free run through me. So like you're coming right at me. So I have the right to stand my ground. So, I don't think he was trying to take him out of the game. I do, on the other hand, though, like, I mean, Xavier was in his head most of the game, but that man was ready to fight for Andrew Sendejo because he thought that was dirty. So, and maybe, you know, like I said, maybe it was. I don't know, but from my perspective, it didn't look dirty. I just hope Andrew Sendejo was okay because you could tell right away it was a wrap, but.
Yeah, that was a scary moment there.
Yeah,
JR, I guess
we definitely missed him though after that.
Oh man, yeah, and we'll definitely get into that. We'll be telling us a little bit about that as we move along here. And JR, I guess last point there. I guess what are your thoughts? Someone obviously played the game as well. I guess what are your thoughts on that collision and the intent that Thomas had and if he was looking to really knock Dejo out of the game?
Yeah, it wasn't dirty at all. I agree with all the points stated before. They were running a man beater concept where Michael Thomas was running a 5-yard in and the fullback out of the backfield was running a flat route. And Sendejo was responsible for the fullback coming out of the backfield on the flat route. And Michael Thomas was coming back inside. He was looking to defeat man coverage, trying to get Xavier Rhodes off of him. He never seen Andrew Sendejo. Sendejo never seen him either. So it was just a bad collision at the last second. It looks like Michael Thomas put his forearm up through Sendejo's head, which all he was doing was trying to protect himself. And it was kind of those quick reaction moments where he was just running inside trying to protect himself. But I don't think he meant or had any intent of intentionally knocking out Sendejo.
Well, all right. All right. We've covered the feelings, the emotions of going through the game. And, you know, if you're a listener and you just want to keep, you know, riding the high of the game and don't want to get in too deep into the X's and O's, or don't potentially want to hear something that might be, you know, not altogether positive, because we are going to critically look at things here, by all means, feel free to stop listening now, because, you know, we don't want to upset you or bring you down ahead of this weekend's matchup. But if you do want to stick around and listen to, you know, JR, Miles, Yinka really break down what they saw, not just in the first go around and what they were feeling, but, you know, the X's and O's of everything, you know, keep riding with us here. And we're going to start with JR as we go kind of looking at things overall before the game, you know, JR gave us kind of his deep dive into what he was looking to see in the coaching matchup, QBs, and all of those kind of high-level details about the game. Well, the game played out. JR, what are your thoughts on kind of how that all went, the coaching, how the QBs played, and just your general thoughts about, you know, how the game was played, coached, et cetera?
Well, I really thought it was a tale of two halves, especially for the Minnesota Vikings offense. They came out, they had a great plan, especially in the first half. What really surprised me about the Saints' defensive game plan early on was it was an exact replica of what they did in week one. They came out, they played a lot of man coverage, which is what they did in week one, and the Vikings receivers was just having their way with them. What we saw was Pat Shurmur came out. He put an emphasis on running a lot of rub routes, a lot of crossing routes, and like I tweeted out last night, he put a big emphasis on running the mesh concept where there was a lot of shallow crossers intersecting each other, and that's why we were seeing so many wide-open receivers early on for the Vikings, especially in the shallow areas of the field. Stephon Diggs was doing a good job of getting open early on. Adam Thielen got off to a slow start, but they started attacking Marshawn Lattimore. They started trusting Thielen a little bit more against him in one-on-one coverage. And what you saw was he started to draw more penalties against Lattimore because he's known to be extremely grabby once he gets in man-to-man coverage. He still has some technical flaws that he's working through. He's a very, very promising young corner, but Thielen is just better than him right now as far as a route runner and beating him in one-on-one coverage. They tried to establish Latavius Murray early on, but that really didn't work out. Jerick McKinnon started getting some touches, and they had a little bit of success in a running game, not as much as you would have liked. Second half, I thought they went away from their initial game plan, and they never adjusted to what the Saints did. And what the Saints did was they sat back and they relied more on their pass rush as opposed to playing more man coverage and generating more pressure from six or seven man pressures. And instead, they just sat back and played zone and forced Keenum to make those crucial mistakes. And that's what they did to him when the Vikings went up 17-7. Keenum did make that crucial mistake throwing the interception to Marcus Williams. So it was a tale of two halves. And I think the coaching matchup was, I think it was even for the most part, guys. Zimmer came out, he dominated the first half. And I think Sean Payton had a great counter or adjusted really well in the second half. And that was evident as they scored 24 points in the span of 17 minutes to finish the game.
Wow. That's too many points. Too many points. Miles, how about you, man? As you were, you know, watching the game, watching the matchups, what are your thoughts on how things shook out, you know, DBs, wide receivers, and all of that?
Yeah, I think we had talked about before the game last week about, you know, who we thought Marshawn Lattimore might shadow. I think we kind of expected it to be Thielen just based off of kind of the way, you know, we've watched over the last, especially the last half of the season, how Keenum liked to lock on to Thielen a little bit more often. So I think they were like, let's shut Thielen down, which I think it went into our favor because Stephon Diggs after the catch, you know, like JR pointed out, a lot of those mesh routes that we ran against man coverage, you know, Crawley couldn't stick with Diggs on those because he's getting picked left and right, not even like illegal picks or anything like that. He just had to run through a lot of the crowd. So I thought that was perfect. I mean, I think once Pat Shurmur saw that Marshawn Lattimore was going to shadow Adam Thielen, I think Shurmur got excited because he's like, all right, let's get Diggs in the open field because he's our best playmaker with the ball in his hand. So, and it worked. You know, you converted a lot of third downs and got Diggs going early and it got the crowd into it. So that was great. Michael Thomas, oh my gosh. Michael Thomas he's going to be really good. And like, he is all right now, but he's going to be a really good player. And he showed it on Sunday. And he showed that the moment wasn't too big for him. He wanted to win. He wanted it. He was better than Xavier Rhodes almost all day. So, and he got into Xavier Rhodes' head. We've seen a lot of instances where Xavier Rhodes gets into other guys, you know, the receivers' heads because, you know, he's locking them down. He's got his hands on them. But for some reason, it really seemed like Xavier Rhodes was being a lot more passive with Michael Thomas. He didn't really seem like he was putting his hands on him as much as he normally does with receivers. Looked like he kind of was looking to more like shadow him. Maybe he was afraid of getting some of the the holding calls, you know, some of those penalties, he didn't want to, you know, overreach or anything like that, you know, where he loses a step. He just looks a little more passive than he normally does in games against bigger receivers. So, yeah, kudos to Michael Thomas for winning that matchup, because he had himself a day. And then some of the other matchups, like Ted Ginn did, you know, he did his part. He got himself open on, you know, numerous amount of plays against Mackenzie Alexander specifically in the slot. And then, like I had mentioned in my article, and then, you know, later on in our pod and everything like that, Alvin Kamara, the way they used him was, you know, the way we've seen them do it all season. And this is one part where I'm really surprised the Vikings defense and Zimmer didn't adjust. There was a lot of instances in that third and fourth quarter where they would, you know, isolate Alvin Kamara on Eric Kendricks one-on-one, and we were playing man coverage, and Kendricks didn't have any help. And I'm not saying Eric Kendricks isn't fast. I'm not saying Eric Kendricks isn't a good player, because he held his own, you know, for the most part in a way, besides that big touchdown, obviously. But I'm surprised they didn't take a little bit more advantage of that, because Kamara got open quite a bit against Eric Kendricks. And I mean, they did make us pay for it, like I said earlier, with that touchdown. But I just thought Sean Payton did a really good job isolating Alvin Kamara in space and letting him go up against a linebacker. I mean, that's what you want. That's what, as an offense, you want one of your arguably your best offensive player against, you know, a player who's not as good of an athlete. So I thought they did a really good job there. And I, you know, it was one thing that definitely scared me going into this game, and they exploited it. Other than that, first half, you know, the Vikings suffocated. Second half, they just didn't adjust the way you'd like them to. And then the Vikings did the same thing, but flipped. You know, they were really, really hot early, you know, came out the gate swinging, a lot of great concepts. But then the Eagles were able to, you know, counter, and they were able to adjust at halftime and kind of figure out what the Vikings were doing and play to their strengths. And so overall, though, I thought it was a great matchup. And then obviously, you know, how it ended. So I thought it was really fun to watch.
Awesome. And before we go to Sexy Prince, actually, I need to circle back with JR for just a second, because you talked a little bit about the overall, you talked about the coaches, but I do want to get your insight. I guess, what are your thoughts on how the quarterbacks played? And I, you know, kind of probably goes along with your theme for the game overall, tale of two halves, but I guess break down that for us a little bit there in terms of, what are your thoughts kind of overall for the entire game of how Drew Brees played? What are your thoughts overall for the entire game of how Case Keenum played?
Well, first I'll start with Drew Brees. I thought he came out really skittish. He looked really nervous, which I really wasn't expecting from Drew Brees. You saw that the pass rush looked like it was kind of affecting him early on, even though the Vikings defense wasn't really getting home and sacking him often. They were doing a good job of pushing the pocket, especially up the middle. Tom Johnson and Linval Joseph did a really good job in the first half on the interior of making it hard on him to see over top of his center and right and left guards, because they were right back into his lap. And we know the Saints' offensive front was lacking. They were down Andres Pete, so they were down a starter in that area. So we knew the Vikings' defense was going to attack that left guard area or that left guard spot, because they were down a starter in Pete. And I thought they did a really good job pushing the pocket in the first half. But as the game went on, you saw Drew Brees just get more comfortable. And they really adjusted, as I stated earlier. The second half, I thought he was phenomenal. He looked like the future Hall of Fame quarterback that we're accustomed to seeing week in and week out. I thought they did a great job of getting Alvin Kamara more involved. I think that really jump-started their offense. And they started attacking Xavier Rhodes. Everyone knows that Rhodes is very well respected around the league. But they kind of just said, screw it. Let's see what happens. Let's go after him. And that's what they did with Michael Thomas. And they started having some success with that. And they started feeding Thomas a bit more, especially when Xavier Rhodes lost his temper, he lost his cool. And they took advantage of that. And they did a good job of attacking Anthony Harris once Andrew Sindejo went out the game, which is a veteran move by Sean Payton. And Drew Brees, because we all know throughout the week, the starters, of course, get a bevy of the reps. And Anthony Harris hasn't had those starter reps like Sindejo has had. So he may not be in tune or accustomed with some of the calls that Mike Zimmer was making. So it was good that they went right after him. And on the flip side of that, Case Keenum, he was very up and down, in my opinion. Some throws were very good. Some throws are very inaccurate. We saw some shallow throws that he could have completed. I think there was an out route to Stephon Diggs, like a six-yard out route that was way off. He had a shallow crosser earlier in the game that he threw completely over Diggs' head as well. So, but there was some throws that was great. Obviously, the rainbow throw, Jarius Wright, was a phenomenal throw. I thought that was by far the best throw of the game outside of Drew Brees' touchdown throw to Michael Thomas, where he came all the way across the field. I thought the throw to Jarius Wright by Case Keenum was by far the best throw of the game outside of the last throw of the game, of course. But I thought he was very up and down throughout the game. But he did what he did do a good job of. He did a great job of managing the game. And what I loved seeing from Case Keenum was that despite throwing that horrible interception when it was 17-7, he came back, and I thought he redeemed himself. He did a good job of matriculating the ball down the field, and he got his face back. He did a good job of being on time, completing passes after that point. So I thought both quarterbacks played well, but they did have their, you know, bright spots and low spots at times.
Awesome. Thanks, man. And last but certainly not least, Saxy Prince. I mean, what were your thoughts? I know that, you know, before we came on here, you were giving it a, what is this? I don't know, maybe your second, third rewatch of the game, but digging into, you know, what was going on, the story in the trenches. What are your thoughts, man? How did things look? I guess, could you really get into the what was happening in the trenches when you're watching live in the stadium? And then I guess, what are your thoughts upon, you know, second and third rewatch of
things? Yeah. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, from where I was kind of perched at, because I was up pretty high, you really can't see a lot of you can't see a lot of the individual stuff that you see when you really can break down the tape. So, you know, I have had to watch this. This is on my third attempt watching it. So the tale of, you know, what's going on in the trenches, there's a lot of this happening there. I think Sean Payton identified where the weaknesses in the Vikings offensive line was, and he attacked it. And that weakness was Rashad Hill. Basically, I know, Jason, we had talked off air, but they basically made it so that Cameron Jordan was constantly attacking Rashad Hill. And you could show, because there was a lot of Rashad Hill gave up a bunch of pressures as far as Case Keenum, which I think at times did affect, you know, some of the throws are a little bit quicker, maybe more some of the more inaccurate throws. But I think that was obviously the biggest weakness for the Vikings. To me, it still feels as if Pat Elflein isn't maybe completely 100% healthy. You didn't really see any screens at all in this game. And, you know, one thing that I had said prior to the game is like, hey, I really wanted to see the Vikings try to attack some of the linebackers with, you know, some tunnel screens if they can, you know, have it pretty well blocked and stuff. I mean, maybe get Elflein to the second level. But you didn't really see that as much this game. It was basically kind of just like, hey, just hold the line and, you know, we'll win.
They tried.
So, yeah, they and did. I mean, there was
on Rudolph.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually did end up happening. You know, like you said, Rudolph had the block in the back. But I don't know. I didn't necessarily feel like the Vikings offensive line won more of their battles. I think there was a few times where I think Keenum got sacked twice. I forget how many it was, but. You know, on the other side of the ball, you saw in the first half, the Vikings defensive line especially were really doing a really good job as far as making Drew Brees very uncomfortable. That's something that I saw at the stadium. You saw Drew Brees a little jittery in the pocket. He's not really one to escape the pocket too much, but you know, there were times where you really felt like Drew Brees was really feeling the pressure. One of the times was definitely. When they were marching down the field, they were on, they were kind of close. They were in our territory, like probably on like the 17-yard line or whatever. You know, Everson Griffin does his spin move and you can kind of feel Drew Brees like, crap, I know what's going to happen. So he tries to get the ball out quick. And Everson Griffin, lucky enough, puts his hands up and able to tip it to Anthony Barr. So I do think like the first half, you know, that affected the way that Drew Brees was operating. Second half, whatever Peyton did as far as, you know, change or get those. I know that he got the ball out quicker, so obviously there are a lot more short throws, all that stuff to Thomas and Willie Snead and company. But you know, but at the same time, Drew Brees just looked a lot more comfortable. And I think that that was part of what was happening in the trenches. As far as the running backs go, this is something that I've seen with teams, which I don't see why teams haven't been able to figure out. And I'm worried that Bill Belichick has probably already figured it out. When it comes to the run game, there's obviously some weaknesses for the Vikings. I think gap discipline sometimes becomes a thing, over pursuit. But I think if the Saints had stayed with Kamara a little bit more, you saw some plays that, you know, Kamara was able to get. There was a, I think it was a swing pass to get around Eric Kendricks. And then I think there was another play where it was just like a simple like 9-yard run or whatever. Kamara was actually playing very, very well. Ingram, on the other hand, Vikings were allowing nothing. I think on the flip side, you saw the exact same thing. You know, if you know, Jet was essentially our Kamara. You could really see him be efficient. You know, when he got the ball, there was one play that was stopped like probably 2 or 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and Jet was still able to get, you know, a 2-yard gain off of that. And I think that's something that he is able to add to this a dimension of this offense that Latavius Murray truthfully can't. Latavius Murray gets what he's given. You know, if it's a offensive line can get a 1-yard push, Latavius Murray is getting 1 yard. If Elf line can get to the second level and maybe, you know, have a well blocked thing, yeah, Latavius Murray will get, you know, big gain on that. But I do think the Vikings need to start manufacturing more touches for Jerick McKinnon. I've said it before. I said it during the game, like, get Jerick McKinnon the ball, because I think he's the closest you can get to the same level of production that you might have seen from a Dalvin Cook. He's not Dalvin Cook, obviously, but I do think like he's very similar in that respect, and that allows you to do a little bit more. So as far as the trenches go, I think it was at times it was kind of a push, because the first half was very Vikings dominant. Second half was very Saints dominant. And as far as the running back goes, the Saints just were not patient enough with their running game to stick with Kamara to open some things up a little bit more. But I guess that didn't really matter, because Drew Brees, went right back to the Drew Brees we knew and was able to hit, you know, some very, very accurate passes. So, yeah.
All right.
Wait, hold up. I got a couple of questions. There's just stuff I've been thinking about, just because I, you know, obviously you go back and look at the game and you just kind of replay everything. And I just wanted to spotlight a couple of things. And this isn't even like, because there are definitely some faults, but I want to spotlight two guys that I think were able to just kind of overcome and like basically be the reason this team won this game. Kai Forbath, for one. You know, I know that's always been a worry this whole season of, you know, him in a big situation scares us, because, you know, needing him to make a big field goal in a big moment. I know definitely Blair Walsh plays a big part in that, like that scare. And you know, back and you know, even further back, but him missing that field goal before the half, and then being able to hit that same field goal later in the game, and then, you know, him not hit, if he doesn't hit that 53 yarder, you know, we're not even sitting here talking about this. So, for him to be able to come back and hit a big, you know, two big kicks the way he did in that second half, props to him for that, just because, I think that's just only going to boost his confidence level moving forward. And confidence, if we could have got within 60 yards, that he would have had an opportunity to make that kick at the end, you know, if Diggs doesn't score. Just because he made that big 53-yard kick doesn't mean he would have made it, but it just helps set me at ease a little bit more. And then one thing we've talked about all season long is, how is Case Keenum going to perform late in the fourth quarter? Can he drive this team down to potentially win games, you know, set up game-winning field goals, game-winning touchdowns, whatever? We haven't really had too many chances to really see that from him this season. He did that on Sunday. He drove us down for that, what potentially could have been the game-winning field goal from Kai Forbath. And I know the end one was more of the miracle than it was, you know, the phenomenon that is Case Keenum, but he still did it. He still was able to lead this team to a game-winning drive on a touchdown. He did it twice in the fourth quarter, so I just want to give him props for for doing that, especially being able to come back from that horrific interception we've talked about. And, you know, again, just being able to come back in late in the fourth quarter twice to lead this team to a victory in the division round of the playoffs, I just think, you know, I don't think that's being talked about enough.
Yeah, Miles, and to both of those points, I just looked up the stats. You know, Kai Forbath right now, I believe he's 20 of the season. He was 22 of 23 on field goals made, and I think he was 81% as far as PAT. So obviously he struggled PATs wise, but he was a pretty solid kicker as far as field goals. There is a little bit of the, you know, the Blair Walsh residual every time he misses a field goal.
Right.
There's, you know, like, oh my God, what are we going to do about Kai? But, and I think there were some storylines that I saw read out there that Kai Forbath could be a potential liability. I don't know. Kai has been a fairly consistent kicker since we've gotten him. I think he's probably one of the better kickers in the league. But yeah, I think it is just that Blair Walsh was residue that just kind of just sticks with us, because the kicks were just horrible, or the misses were really bad for our, you know, just for our, you know, Vikings history. But to touch on what you said about as far as Case Keenum, I think you do. You saw that, I think it was about a 17 yard pass to Stephon Diggs in the middle of the field, and then you saw. I think this is what you get as far as Case Keenum. You have the YOLO case that exists, right? And with that gunslinger mentality, there's going to be times where, you know, there's going to be times where it's going to really bite you in the butt. And there's also going to be times where it's going to help you. I mean, if you actually really diagnose that pass, you know, that pass wasn't the most accurate pass. I mean, if it really was supposed to be helping us to get in the field range, he might have put it out a little bit more to the outside than he did.
But here it's because
it's because of the fact that it was slightly inaccurate that allowed Diggs to do the things that he did. And I think that kind of speaks to, you know, for those of us who are a little bit skeptics and critics as far as Case Keenum, you have to understand that there are other factors that, you know, put us in position to win. And like, again, that slightly inaccurate throw, if it was accurate, we probably wouldn't have won that game. So,
well, and like you said, some of those YOLO throws, like that throw to Adam Thielen on that, you know, that drive that over Marshawn Lattimore, with, I know there would have been a PI call and a holding, but he still came down with it. Like,
yeah, no, and that's,
I don't think you've seen any other quarterbacks even willing to take that shot.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get that give and take, like you said, you get that give and take, that YOLO interception, but you also get that, those two YOLO plays to Adam Thielen on the, toward the end of the game, and the one to Stephon Diggs near the end zone, the red zone and third down that we converted for a touchdown. So like you get some of that give and take, but I just wanted to give him props for, you know, something that we were worried about all season, and then him actually being able to come back and do it. I wanted to give him props for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said, the things that he's been able to do, I know we talk it up to luck and magic and stuff, but those are things that, you know, at times we didn't see, you know, from other quarterbacks willing to take, or that we've had, that we currently have on the roster, take more chances, maybe throw it down the field a little bit more. So yeah, like it's me having to say, like, yeah, I'm fortunate for YOLO Case that, you know, I loved watching YOLO Case in the preseason because it was fun. It was preseason, didn't matter. But as the season rolled on, I was like, okay, we need to reel back in the YOLO Case, but it, YOLO Case has at times helped us way more than it's hurt us. So no, I agree with those props that you're giving, Miles.
Well, I'm glad you agree with those props Miles was given, since you called me every name outside my own during the game.
While we were, man, I was worried. Man, I was worried. Okay, I wanted us to win.
While we was in there talking about it with YOLO Case, and Yinka was giving me the business.
I believe it.
Yeah, he was going in on me about, oh, man, yeah, you should see it. You should see the text.
This is what I've been talking about. This is what I've been saying.
After that interception, boy, Yinka was on me hard.
I was hard, man. And this is the thing. That's why it's good we have a group chat, because like that, when you're watching the game, it's just like you're a fan, right? You like.
That's why I keep my phone away, because I don't like the initial reaction.
It's so easy to be a fan and stuff. But like after the game's over, we watch it and all the emotions are out. It's like when I go back and rewatch this, it helps me to step away from just being a fan, and I can like really feel like I'm analyzing things fairly unbiasedly. So, yeah, never read the group DMs, y'all, because it's going to be crazy.
That's why I just talk about scheme, not performance.
Yinka was, yeah, in the moment. That was full-fledged fan Yinka, angry.
I was so upset.
But that's it, man. I think we covered all we're going to cover. We already let y'all know Yinka wrote an awesome piece over at Daily Norseman. Go check it out if you haven't already. I will link to it in the show notes. JR, in the midst of all the madness, JR dropped his 2.0. Is mock draft version 2.0?
Yeah.
Is that what it was, JR?
2.0.
Yes, sir. Yeah, JR dropped that, so go on and give that a look. And if you haven't already, Miles, between when the last show aired and this show, Miles did drop a little something breaking down the wide receiver DB matchups that were to happen. So if you haven't read that already, go ahead, make sure you read that as well. And I will link to that in the show notes also. And yeah, I think that's it. Feel like we touched on everything we want to. And at some point here in the not too distant future, we'll link back up to break down this enticing Eagles matchup and how we think that'll go down. One more game between the Vikings being the first team to ever host a Super Bowl at home. It's crazy. Looking forward to breaking it down with you boys. So once again, my name is Jason Brown. This has been the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. Thank you for sticking around, listening with us here. And boys, thank you for coming on out. Good times as always. All right.